Good morning, good people. I'm Kiplin Primus, your host for The Local Take. And this week, we're talking about Domestic Violence Awareness Month, which is designated every October. This is another public health concern where the stigma against the victim often occurs. What we do know is that there isn't one demographic that prevents a person from being a victim of domestic violence. It appears in mansions, it appears in apartments, it appears in many domiciles. I reached out to our advocacy organization here in Atlanta, the Partnership Against Domestic Violence, and before we get started, I wanted to share a few statistics. Every minute, 20 people are physically abused by an intimate partner in the United States. 1 in 4 women and 1 in 9 men experience severe intimate partner physical violence. This means that it could be sexual violence, it could be stalking, it could be injuries. 1 in 4 women and 1 in 7 men have been victims of severe physical violence. That means beating or strangling or burning. 1 in 7 women and 1 in 18 men have been stalked by an intimate partner, leaving them to feel fearful. On a typical day, there are more than 20,000 phone calls placed to domestic violence hotlines nationwide. Those are some pretty sobering statistics. Nancy Freyov is the CEO of the Partnership Against Domestic Violence, and she's here to join us in this discussion. Nancy Freyov, welcome to The Local Take.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here with you and have the opportunity to talk about this.
Can you tell us, what does the domestic violence situation look like in our community?
Well, unfortunately, the domestic violence in the metro Atlanta area looks the same as it does in all communities, and it reflects the statistics that you just provided. And I appreciate you saying that, unfortunately, it occurs in all demographics. It doesn't matter race, religion, sexual orientation, economic status, educational level. It is consistent across all of those things.
And now, with almost everything, you know, COVID exacerbated the problem. Was that also the case with domestic violence?
That was absolutely the case. Domestic violence incidents went up during COVID. This was reflected in studies done both by police departments and in hospital emergency rooms. And unfortunately, we also saw the severity of the violence that went up during this time. This makes sense for a number of reasons. During much of COVID, we were restricted to being at home. And so victims were at home with their perpetrators. We were all very anxious and on edge. Domestic violence is about power and control. I think we all felt that we lost control during COVID. And so if someone's choosing to use violence to do that, to deal with that, it's more likely that's going to happen. During COVID, survivors didn't have an opportunity to get out of the house, to get to a telephone, to request assistance. So yes, we often talk about domestic violence being the pandemic inside the pandemic.
So now, what are some of the challenges that face victims? You know, have we gotten to a point where when people say that they've been abused, that they are believed? Because often we hear about, you know, victims of this not being believed, you know, by family members or friends. Are the victims always aware of the danger that they're in? What are some of those challenges that folks face?
I think absolutely. Survivors know that the violence and abuse is terrible. And it's important to talk about, certainly the physical abuse is awful, but it can take the form of verbal abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse. They understand when they're with the physical violence, they understand how destructive that is. I think there is the tendency to say, well, it was bad, but he's not going to do it again. There's a cycle of violence where after the violence occurs, the perpetrator is very sorry and apologizes and promises things are going to be better. So the survivor often wants to believe that. I think sometimes other forms of abuse people don't recognize, things like financial, emotional, verbal, sometimes sexual abuse, and those are all forms of abuse that are part of domestic violence. I think it really varies whether or not survivors are believed. I think there is more understanding that domestic violence is real and that we need to take action. I think sometimes family members do try to minimize it because it feels difficult to think either someone in their family is perpetrating or being the victim of that. But there's a number of barriers to getting assistance. Fear is a huge one. The perpetrators told this victim, if you tell anyone, I'll kill you, I'll kill the children. If you go to your family, I'll kill your family members. Sometimes I think law enforcement's made a lot of progress in how they respond, but sometimes there may be a, oh, you two just work it out and things will get better type of response. If someone is undocumented, it can be terrifying to call the police and ask for assistance, and perpetrators will say that you're going to get deported. If you call, there may be a lack of financial resources. There may be a lack of understanding of the criminal justice system or the legal system and how to access those resources to be able to leave safely. So there can be a number of barriers.
Now, you mentioned the cycle of abuse, that the abuse happens, then there's the apology, and then kind of a honeymoon period starts. And we've heard about this, you know, for decades. We've heard about this cycle of abuse. Why do people wait to leave, you know, beyond fear? How do can they overcome this cycle that they have experienced and go ahead and leave?
Right. Well, I think it's one thing to hear about it, and it's another thing to be in the middle of it. And the reality is that most of these relationships started out great. In fact, that's a trait of a warning sign for a domestic violence relationship. The person is so loving. They want to be with you all the time. They're taking you on trips. They're sending you gifts. And so you get this message of, oh, this person really sees me and understands me and cares about me. And so there's a great bond and a relationship and love that's established initially. And it doesn't just start by, you know, one day everything's great and the next day I'm being slammed up against a wall. It could start with, oh, there's a little more jealousy and I'm getting yelled at if I don't return a text within 3 minutes. And, oh, well, but then he says it's really okay. But, oh, then I got shoved into a wall, but then he was really, really sorry. And for 3 months, everything was great. So when you're in the midst of it and you're loving that person and you're thinking that you're working through it, it's a very different sense than when you're standing outside of it and you're kind of in your head intellectually thinking about it. Another really important thing to remember is that survivors are most at risk of being killed while they're leaving the situation or after they've left. So that message of, well, you should just leave and everything would be okay, is in fact not true. Again, when you understand that domestic violence is about power and control, and if someone is losing the victim, if the victim is walking away, then that perpetrator is completely losing that power and control, and so could escalate to inflicting a mortal wound, kind of that if I can't have you, nobody will have you type of thing. And the survivor's been told over and over again, this is what's going to happen to you if you leave me. So there can be a great deal of fear and realistic fear when someone is trying to leave that situation.
So how can family and members of the community, you know, support that person that they may believe is a victim of domestic violence?
Right. Well, that's a great question. And I have to say, it is extremely difficult for someone that you care about or love for you to watch them going through that situation and being hurt in that way. And often what friends and family members will want to do is rush in and you have to leave and I'm going to move you out. But being a survivor of domestic violence is all about losing that sense of power and control. So the reality is it has to be that person that decides what they want to do, when they want to do it, and how they want to do it. It's not going to work if someone else forces it on them, and it's not going to provide them that opportunity to reclaim themselves and define themselves and find their strength. So what we can do is we can say, I'm worried about you. You don't deserve this. You deserve to be safe. What can I do? I'm here for you. Here's a hotline number. If you don't want to talk to me, call the hotline. You don't even have to tell them your name. You don't even have to know what you want to do. It's just a safe place that you can start thinking about what's going on and what you want to do about it. That's really the best thing that friends or family members, or maybe you have a professional colleague, or maybe you have an employee that you're concerned about their safety and what's going on with them. That being there for them, saying I'll support you, saying I trust and understand your journey is very, very important.
You know, how do we start to change this story? Because we're taught from kindergarten on, you know, keep your hands to yourself. Why is this so hard for some folks to do?
Right. Well, I think what we're taught and what we see and experience are two very different things, because we may be taught something, but if everything around us tells us something else, and if we experience that, that's what we're going to believe and what we're going to act on. We know that children that were victims of child abuse are much more likely to grow up to be people who perpetrate abuse. So it's extremely important that we, that really the way we're going to break the cycle of violence is to raise our children in safe, loving, nonviolent homes. We need to teach children to keep their hands off of each other, but we need to model that. We need to help children learn empathy. We have to help children learn respect, respect for women, respect for men, respect for all people. And when we can start addressing these things at the root of where they start, we're gonna see more systemic change. The other thing that we need to do is exactly what you're doing with this radio show. We need to talk about it. We need to take it out of the darkness. We need to understand that it's never okay to hurt someone that you care about. And we need to make sure that we continue to have the resources available to address it. And I think both for the survivor and for the perpetrator, there are programs out there that really help perpetrators take responsibility for their behavior, be honest about their behavior, and learn the tools to do things differently going forward.
Nancy Freehoff, I want to thank you so much for sharing this information with us this morning. Thank you.
Absolutely. And I just would like to be sure that all your listeners have our hotline number, which is 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. It is 404-873-1766.
Nancy, thank you so much. That number again is 404-873-1766. I'm Kiplin Primus, your host for The Local Take. And we've been talking with Nancy Freehoff from the Partnership Against Domestic Violence. We're going to continue our conversation about domestic violence awareness with Laura Mora from the International Women's House in DeKalb County.